If you have your Bible, you can turn to Isaiah chapter 6. We have been in the book of Isaiah. We thought it would be neat to do a Christmas series and look back at some of the prophetic words that came 600 years before Jesus was born. It was a neat way to do that for Christmas, but we also decided, hey, let's just stretch this out. We haven't been in an Old Testament book, so let's just go through Isaiah. So we're going to hit some of the important passages of Isaiah. I'm not going to cover each chapter of the book, but we're going to go through it. And today we're looking at another significant passage. It's one that we see Isaiah has an encounter with God and realizes how much greater God is than what he thought of him. It kind of reminds me, when I was a sophomore in college, me and a buddy of mine, we decided, hey, let's go out west. Like, let's go and see as much as we can. We thought, awesome, let's do it. So I think the two of us, we loaded up in my truck. I think we had $500 between the two of us, and we just headed out towards the Grand Canyon. Got there, saw some neat things, and then started going up through California. And about the time we got to Yosemite, we were tired. We had driven like 4,000 miles in a few days or something crazy. And so we thought, let's slow down. So we pulled off in Yosemite, knew we'd stay there, but ended up staying there a little bit longer. Ended up doing a hike and maybe 8-10 miles back into the woods. That was pretty cool. And then we're at a campsite and a guy's talking. He's like, hey, you're only like a mile and a half, 2 miles from Half Dome. We're like, awesome. What's Half Dome? And he starts to tell us, he's like, well, this is the thing that people come to Yosemite to see. It's this huge granite. It's like if you have a dome and you half it, and it's a rock in the shape of that huge granite piece. And so he's talking about it. He's like, oh, I've been up there. Just, you're so high up. It's this amazing feeling. Just never felt a peace like heaven. And we're sort of like, wow, this is awesome. I think we'll do it. He's like, well, that's great. Go do it. But you need to be careful because the last little bit of it, last 300 yards or so, it's straight up. Like, no problem. He's like, well, it's straight up a granite face. No problem. And he's like, well, there's these cables that you have to hold on to go up, and you really need some gloves. If you don't have gloves, it's really dangerous. People go up, and you know, at the bottom, there's just all these shredded gloves that people have used from these metal cables. And we're like, okay, we got this. And we just started hearing about how neat it was, so we're like, well, let's go do it. And so we did the last couple miles up, and as we got closer, it got steeper and steeper until finally we got to the last few hundred yards of this, and it is literally just this huge, massive rock. And we're like, I don't know, it felt like 8,000 feet up in the air on this massive granite rock, and it feels like this thing is going straight up. And we look and see all these shredded gloves, and we're like, if we don't have gloves, that's going to be our hands. Our hands are going to be completely shredded. And we realize that we've never used gloves or cables because we've never hiked up a granite face like what we're about to see. And so me and my buddy, we took a picture of the two of us, and it's the trail, or the straight up is behind us, and we're going like that. We axed it. We're like, there's no way. And in fact, like, we're not really prepared for that. But even on a good day, like, even if we brought gloves, we may not go up this thing. It was just so intimidating. It was just so, we stood in awe of it. Like we had heard about what it was going to be like to come to the face of this rock, but we couldn't understand it until we got there, until we felt the height that we were at, until we realized the steepness of it and just the gravity that was there. Kind of seeing Isaiah experience something like that with God in this passage, where he has heard about God, but in this passage, he sees God. He sees who God is, and he has a deeper experience of who he is. And we're going to see Isaiah is just completely undone by this. And what we see in this passage is it's this awe-inspiring experience of God that ends up propelling Isaiah to serve God. And I think something of that is behind each person when they come to Christ, when they submit their lives to him, when they follow him. So they've come to a place of being in awe of him and that they're serving him out of their hearts. Not just because they have to, but because they have encountered the living God. And so we're going to look at this. We're going to read Isaiah 6, and then we're going to come back and talk about this. Isaiah 6, verse 1. It says, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him stood the seraphim. Each had six wings. With two, he covered his face, and with two, he covered his feet, and with two, he flew. And one called to another and said, holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the foundations of the threshold shook at the voice of him who called. And the house was filled with smoke. And I said, woe is me, for I am lost. For I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Then one of the seraphim flew to me, having in his hand a burning coal that he had taken with tongs from the altar. And he touched my mouth and said, behold, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for. And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go for us? And I said, here I am, send me. And he said, go and say to this people, keep on hearing, but do not understand. Keep on seeing, but do not perceive. Make the heart of this people dull and their ears heavy, and blind their eyes, lest they see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their hearts and turn and be healed. And then I said, how long, O Lord? And he said, until cities lie waste without inhabitant and houses without people, and the land is a desolate waste, and the Lord removes people far away, and the forsaken places are many in the midst of the land. And though a tenth remain in it, it will be burned again like a terebinth or an oak whose stump remains when it is felled. The holy seed is its stump. That's the word of the Lord. So I want to go through and look at some of this section. First thing to see in this passage is that this event, it occurs in the year that King Uzziah died. We've been talking throughout the book of Isaiah of how God's people, they've turned from him. They have not been following him. And so what's happening is that God is allowing the other nations to come in and defeat the Israelites. That's some of the backdrop to the book of Isaiah. Uzziah, he was the king of this time. Uzziah was a good king, and there's some parallels with Uzziah and the people of God. Uzziah, he's not as famous as like David or Solomon, right? Most people have heard of David. Most people have heard of Solomon. Uzziah, you maybe not have heard of. Didn't have some of the major achievements. Didn't have some of the promises that God made with David. But it does say that Uzziah was a good king. Uzziah became king when he was 16 years old, and he reigned 52 years. 2 Chronicles 26, 4 says that he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord's sight, as his father Amaziah had done. So there are some good things that Uzziah did. But one of the things that happens with Uzziah is that he experienced some victories, he experienced some success. And apparently he let that success go to his head. Sometimes the test of prosperity is harder than the test of adversity. And that's the case with Uzziah. It says, this is verse 16, 2 Chronicles 26, 16. It says, but when Uzziah became strong, he grew arrogant, and it led to his own destruction. He acted unfaithfully against the Lord, his God, by going into the sanctuary to burn incense on the altar. So only the priests were authorized to go into the sanctuary and offer incense. But Uzziah let success go to his head. He got a big head, and he thinks that he can do it. As he goes in to do that, the Lord strikes him with a skin disease, strikes him down, and Uzziah will spend the rest of his life in quarantine, and then he will die. What's going on with Uzziah is similar to what's going on with God's people. They've been brought into the land, came out of slavery, experienced the Lord deliver them, but their hearts have grown cold. They've felt like they can do whatever they want, and they have turned from him. And so Isaiah has this vision in the year that King Uzziah dies, the year that the Lord's judgment comes on Uzziah. Uzziah has reigned 52 years. So if you think about this, the political turmoil that's been going on in the nation of Israel, other nations are threatening them, and now you have the king die. The king who's been there for 52 years. Most of us, we've experienced a president for 4 years, maybe 8 years. 52 years. Some people, that's all they've known. And now their king is dead. What's going to happen? Is there going to be a coup? Are other people going to try and take over? So you can think about how destabilizing all of that would be. And yet, in the midst of this, God gives Isaiah a revelation of who he is. You know, a lot of times we try and find comfort. Let's take comfort in political figures. Let's take comfort in how these things are going. But really, true comfort is found in having a greater understanding of who God is. And that's what God gives to Isaiah here. It's in this time, it's in the year that King Uzziah dies, that Isaiah says, I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne. He sees God. He enters the temple, and he doesn't just see the temple, it's he sees the Lord. So all you Spider-Man fans, this isn't like entering the metaverse, all right? This isn't like some funky thing going on. This is God revealing himself. This is God making himself known. What is there all the time, God is drawing Isaiah in to see who he is, to see him. Isaiah sees a glimpse of God. This is amazing because even in the Exodus, when God is bringing his people out of Egypt, he doesn't allow Moses to see his face. In Exodus 33:23, God tells Moses, you will see my back, but my face will not be seen. God allows Isaiah to see who he is. And we see here that the train of his robe fills the temple. We see that the smoke is there. The smoke is designating. It's a graphic way to understand the presence of God is there. It has filled the temple. God's presence has filled this temple. He sees these cherubim. A cherubim. I think we have a picture of those. On the ark, this is the ark. So there are angelic creatures on top of the ark. Cherubim are angelic creatures. This is what is in the presence of God. And each of these creatures, they have wings. They're covering their face. They're covering their feet. Remember when Moses, when he came into where the burning bush, he's instructed, take off your sandals. It's holy ground. And here we see these angelic creatures. They cover their feet. They cover their eyes. Even they have to be shielded from the presence of God, from his holiness. And we see these angelic creatures in the presence of God. They are calling to one another, holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. Not just saying that God's presence fills the temple, he's saying God's presence will fill the entire earth. That's how great he is. They're saying, holy, holy, holy. That's what they speak of God. It's amazing to see this threefold repetition. You know, when something is true in an absolute sense, you may repeat words. Maybe you say things like, man, went to this barbecue place, and man, they have got the beef brisket of all beef brisket. That means it's really good, right? Or maybe you say, man, I got this new phone, and man, it is good, it is good, it is good, right? It's not just good, it's really good, and it's not just really good, it is good, good, good. It means you're in a bit of amazement. Well, this isn't just good, this isn't just nice, it is holy, holy, holy. Holiness denotes just a complete moral perfection. God is completely pure. He's completely holy. He's transcendent. He is so far above creation. He is above the angelic creatures. He's absolute supreme. He's not just a little holy. He is completely holy. This is just the white hot purity of God. You know, when you get something really hot and it becomes just pure white, right? You know, if you have something and it's orange hot, there's a lot of impurities in there, but you get it white hot and all the dross, all the other stuff has been burnt out of it. And that's like what Isaiah is seeing of God. He's seeing how holy, how pure he really is. The sun is 93 million miles from the earth. And you can't even look at it, right? How much more so to be in the presence of the one who created the sun? To see his holiness, to see his absolute transcendence. And that's what Isaiah is being allowed to see. Holy, holy, holy. Only thing that describes God in this trifold of description, it's not love, 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 not mercy, 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 but it's holy, holy, holy. You know, I've heard people say things. I remember there was an old movie growing up, and it was a cowboy. He died, and all his friends are gathering, and he was kind of like the rough and tough guy. And as they're gathering around, they said, well, maybe we should say a few words for him. And one of the guys comes in and says something like, well, you know, Lord, we're sending you so-and-so. Try not to make him mad. And it's kind of this humorous moment in the movie, but when you really think about it, they have no understanding of the holiness of God, of his absolute being. God is not going to be the least bit intimidated by this rough and tough cowboy. He's not going to be intimidated by any human being. No matter who it is, no matter how big and bad they are, maybe it's The Rock, maybe it's, you know, whatever football star is out there that just seems unstoppable. He is nothing compared to a God who is holy, holy, holy. Isaiah is in the presence of God. And when he encounters this, I think Isaiah's response is the only response any of us would have. It's the only response of any human being and being in the presence of a holy God. Verse 5, Isaiah sees all this and his response is, woe is me. I'm lost. I'm undone. That's what he says. Woe is me. Not woe or all of you, but woe is me. He's just completely blown away by who God is. He thought he knew God, but he's experienced God in a way that he never imagined. He's experienced a being that he has never been in the presence of anybody else that is like this. A grown man saying, whoa, I'm lost. That's what Isaiah's response is. In the book of Isaiah, up to this point, there's been 6 times that Isaiah has gone out to preach woe to other people. He has been called to preach and turn this people back to the Lord. He has gone and told them woe. Woe for doing certain things. He says, woe to those who squeeze out the poor. Woe to those who dull themselves with wine and beer so that they do not sense the Lord. He said, woe to those who call evil good and substitute dark for evil. He said, woe to those who are wise in their own opinion. And he said, woe to those who call the guilty innocent for a bribe. This prophet has gone out and preached woe to other people. Woe to you for not following God. And now, in the presence of God, he's completely undone. He realized his own inadequacy. He realized he has no basis to be there in the presence of God. He is completely brought to ruins. When it says that he's undone, it's that word it's used of like a shirt that is just ripped apart at the seams. It's completely undone. It is ruined. And that's what Isaiah considers of himself. He is unworthy, unfit to be in the presence of God. And remember, Isaiah is a prophet, right? So we think if anybody could stand in the presence of God, surely it would be the prophet. And Isaiah is not just any prophet. Remember, if you know the prophets, they're the minor prophets and the major prophets, right? The minor prophets, just short books in the Bible. Major prophets, long books of the Bible. Isaiah, one of the longest books in the Bible. Isaiah was called not just to, there were some prophets who were herdsmen that came and shared God's word for a bit. Isaiah is a nobleman. He spoke in the presence of kings. He was the king's prophet. He would have been a revered man. And yet here he is in the presence of God, completely undone, completely blown away by who God is. In awe of who God is. R.C. Sproul said this in his book, The Holiness of God. Speaking of Isaiah, he says, then Isaiah caught one sudden glimpse of a holy God. And in that single moment, all of his self-esteem was shattered. In a brief second, he was exposed, made naked before the face of the absolute standard of holiness. As long as Isaiah could compare himself to other mortals, he was able to sustain a lofty opinion of his own character. The instant he was measured himself by the ultimate standard, he was destroyed, morally and spiritually annihilated. He was undone. He came apart. His sense of integrity completely collapsed. Naked in the presence of a holy God. That's what happens to Isaiah. He is coming to the absolute standard of right and wrong. You know, a lot of us, we treat serving God kind of like I treat hiking. We'll go hiking, and we always, you know, at different points, like maybe you hear something like, hey, maybe there's a bear out here. And if you've ever been hiking, you've heard this joke where somebody will say, well, hey, I don't need to outrun the bear. I just need to make sure I outrun at least one of you, right? If I can outrun one of you, I'm good. Like the bear will get you, I'll be safe. A lot of times we treat holiness that way, right? I don't need to be perfect. I just need to be better than one of you. Yeah, I know my life's not quite right, but look at so-and-so. They're worse off than me. There's always somebody else. There's always someone you can point to. But converting to following Jesus doesn't mean you're looking to other people and their standards or their lack of standards. It means that you're looking to God for your standard. You're not making excuses. You know that one day you will enter into the white, hot presence of God and have to give an account for everything you've done. And a lot of the excuses we use to justify our behavior, they're going to just burn up and be incinerated in an instant. And we're going to be left there, naked and uncovered, with no excuse. Do we tolerate our sin? Do we make excuses for not following Him? Are we living for God's absolute standard, or are we just living for the world? One of the things that Isaiah will say of these people, said, they praise me with their lips. They praise God with their lips. Their hearts are far from it. There's no integrity between their lips and their heart. And Isaiah is seeing how foolish that is. Are you living for God's absolute standard? If you're doing that, it changes everything. It's no more, well, hey, it was just a little white lie. It's no more, well, you know, yeah, I was just a little bit mean to that person. It changes everything. Where are you in lying and adultery? Is God your absolute standard? Isaiah talks about his lips. Are you bringing your lips into conformity with what God calls you to do? Or do you justify things based on what others have done? Isaiah is without excuse, and he realizes his absolute dependence and need for God. He says, woe is me, I'm undone. And then verse 6 says, one of these seraphim flew to me, having in his hand a burning coal that he had taken with the tongs from the altar, and he touched my mouth and said, behold, this has touched your lips, your guilt is taken away. It's amazing. The one person who's completely just to not forgive Isaiah, to just incinerate him in that moment as the one that responds to his cry for help. It's the one that has mercy when Isaiah begs for it. God, in his absolute holiness, responds to the prayer of his people. God sends one of these angels, these angelic creatures, to take a white-hot coal from the altar and press it on his lips. Sears his lips, and his guilt is removed. Foreshadows the coming of Christ, in which God will deal with all of our sin. He'll deal with it through his own Son, who will take the judgment that we deserve and set us free. Jesus will be completely undone on the cross, dies for our sin so that we can be set free, so that we can be made clean. It's amazing to see this. Isaiah knew he didn't want to have baggage in the presence of God, but he really knows it after this experience. Isaiah is made clean. He's purified by the grace of God. Not because of what he's done, but because of what God has done. And Isaiah experiences a true and sincere breaking. You know, we talk about how God, none of us are saved by our perfect obedience, but we do need to be sincere in following him. Hard for us to know what's going on in people's hearts. People can say all the right things, but it's only God who knows the true sincerity of what's going on. Isaiah has had a true experience. Verse 8 says, "And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, 'Whom shall I send? And who will go for us?'" You know, we talk about the holiness of God. And certainly the holiness of God means that because we're living for him, there are certain things that we're not going to do. I tell my kids that all the time. I'm like, look, you can get on your phones and other stuff. You can access the internet, and there's things that you don't need to see that are very easily to see. It's like, man, I can do the same thing, and it scares me. And what causes me to want to do the right thing when nobody's around is that I know I'm going to stand in the presence of God. There's certain things that I don't do. There's certain movies I'm not going to watch. There's certain things that I don't want to do those things. But I think sometimes in the church, we can look at God and we can kind of preach about a God who seems a bit like a school teacher who's just kind of going around slapping your wrist. Don't do that. Don't do that. There's a degree that's appropriate. But we also see that the holiness of God doesn't just tell Isaiah, don't do these things. The holiness of God propels Isaiah to do certain things. When he encounters the presence of God, he wants to go and do something. After all this, what is his response? They're asking, who shall we send? He says, send me. I'm ready to go. I've had this encounter with God, and I've got to tell somebody. I want others to know who he is and what he's done. I mean, you're like, whoa, right? Somebody has lit a fire in Isaiah's heart. He's passionate about serving God. And you know, sometimes we'll serve God and it feels like we're taking out the trash, right? Oh, man. Wednesday evening, yep, I'll go get the trash can. Man, conversion. When you know Jesus, when you know who he is, it means that you want to do it. It means that you want to honor him. You want to serve him. But before I was a Christian, I just had that view that God is just kind of this unhappy guy and he doesn't want me to have any fun. And then I started reading the Bible and I started seeing, it's like, man, this is how we get set on fire to do the things that God calls us to do in life. Isaiah is called to be a prophet, but here he has this experience. And man, he's on fire for his calling in life. What is God calling you to do? Maybe you're called to be a computer programmer to the glory of God. Go and do it. Do it with a passion. Do it with that understanding that one day I'm going to be in the presence of God and have to give an account of what I've done and how I've done it and what I've spoken about in the office, how I've encouraged people and how I haven't encouraged people and how I've told them about the presence of a true and living God. That's the reason I want to have integrity in the office place. Maybe you're called to teach. Maybe you're called to be an engineer. Whatever it is, do it to the glory of God. And you know, that's one of the things that I want to see. I think about our young people who are here. Man, I'm grateful for people telling me, hey, don't do this, don't do that. But I just pray. I pray this for my kids. I pray it for our kids here. I pray it for our church. Just that we would be captivated by who God is, by his glory, by his holiness. And that we would just be excited to come into his presence. We'd be excited to come into a church. We'd be excited to go into the office place. We'd be passionate about what he's called us to do. Because, man, if you're passionate about following him, you're passionate about serving him, man, all those other little ticky-tack things, man, they're gonna fall into place. The old adage, you get the big rocks in the bucket and all the little stuff falls in, right? If you're moving, get the big stuff in first. You can always find a spot for the little things. If you're serving God, man, know who he is. Know the beauty and glory of his character. The complete awe-inspiringness that just causes you to drop everything and say, woe is me. I've heard about you, but now I've seen you. That's what it means to follow God. It's not reluctant. It's not begrudging. It's that you've had a vision of something else, a vision of something better. Isaiah is commissioned here to go and preach. We'll take just a minute to look at what he's called to do. Verse 9. This is what God tells him. Go and say to this people, keep on hearing, but do not understand. Keep on seeing, but do not perceive. Make the heart of this people dull and their ears heavy and blind their eyes, lest they see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their hearts and turn and be healed. That's Isaiah's calling. He has seen a vision of God. He is ready to go share it. What is he called to do? God is telling him, you are going to go and share with this people. And what are the people going to do? Are they going to turn in repentance? Are they going to fall down on their knees and say, woe is me. God, have mercy. They're going to keep going their own way. They're going to be unfazed. They're going to hear this message and walk out completely unchanged, not going to do anything different. Think about that. Church calls next pastor in, right? Hey, what do you plan to do when you come here? Well, I'm just going to come in. I'm going to preach. Nobody's going to understand. Nobody's going to see. Make the heart of this people dull, their ears heavy. Remember, Isaiah is being called. He's not being called to preach to Babylon, right? He's not being called to preach to Assyria. He's being called to preach to who? God's people. God's people. He's not being called to preach to those outside the church. He's being called to preach to those inside the church. And Isaiah's response to this is, well, how long will this go? And God says this, until these cities lie waste without inhabitant. Houses without people, and the land is desolate. The land will be desolate because these other nations will come in, conquer them, and take them to another country. The Lord will remove this people far away. The forsaken places are many in the midst of this land. It's amazing to see what's going on. As we think about God's love, as we think about his mercy, God is absolutely loving. He is absolutely merciful. But he is holy in every way. And he calls us to serve him with sincerity. And if we don't do that, there are consequences. If you keep telling God no, keep saying, I know you'd call me to do this, but I'm going that way, there are consequences for that. Isaiah knew the mercy of God. Isaiah worked in the temple. He knew the sacrifices. And now he has a vision of God in which he experiences that in a new way. And his message is, don't scorn the grace of God. Don't receive God's mercy in vain. Don't use it as an excuse for sin. There's going to be a reckoning. There's a reckoning for the people of Isaiah's day. And we know the same is true. As we trust in Jesus, there's absolutely forgiveness and mercy. But we can't receive that in vain. We don't just receive that and then go and do whatever we want. There's got to be a sincerity of following him. Our profession of faith, it can't just be something that's on our lips. Being a Christian doesn't just mean that you go to the DMV when they ask you for your religion, or maybe it's a census and you just check the box, well, I'm a Christian. Obviously, I was born in the States. I'm not a Hindu. I'm not a Muslim. I'm a Christian. No. What it means to be a Christian is that your heart has been changed and that you want to follow him. That you know one day you will stand in judgment of what you've done. And you're going to stand before a holy God. And that holiness brings us to our knees, just like it brought Isaiah to his knees. If we're affected by it, if we're truly moved by it, that's the effect that it has. But we can have the opposite effect where we hear about this. And we'll just move on. Hey, what's for lunch? Let's get to the game. I want to take a moment and pray. I want to pray for you, but I also want to give you a chance to pray as well. Father, we thank you that in your word, we know who you are. You're the God who reveals himself. You're the God who pursues his people. You are the living God, holy in the absolute sense. And God, I just pray that you would search our hearts right now and help us to serve you. God, I just pray for those that maybe they feel prompted to commit themselves to you or maybe recommit themselves to you. God, I just want to pray for them. Actually, I just want to give you a chance to respond. If you're in that place, just with heads bowed, I want to pray for you. Just lift your hand. You just feel like you're at a place where it's like, I have not been serving God, and I want to serve him. Will you just lift your hand? I want to pray for you. Father, I just pray for those that just experience a humbling in your presence. God, I just pray that you would encourage them now to trust you and to follow you with all their heart. And just pray for those who lifted a hand. God, I pray that they would know your mercy. I pray they'd know your holiness. I pray that they would follow you with all their heart. I pray that this would be a turning point in their walk with you, that there would be a change. God, I pray for all of us. Lord, I just pray that we would take our walk with you seriously. We wouldn't make excuses. And we would live wholly and completely for the day we stand before you. I want to give you a chance just to pray. Just with your heads bowed, we're going to sing one last song, but just take a moment. Just pray. One of the ways I encourage people, if you don't know what to pray, sorry, thank you, please. That's something that's easy to remember. You say sorry. If you've done something wrong, you say sorry. If you need help, you ask for help. Experience gratitude, you say thank you. Just want you to take a moment now and just pray to the Lord. Seek him and just talk with him for a moment.